I don't go with pragmatic arguments at all. My whole take on libertarianism is simply that I don't know what's best for other people.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller and the author of the New York Times bestseller, God No. Signs You May Already Be an Atheist and Other Magical Tales. Penn, thanks for talking to us.
Always a pleasure.
What is your big goal in publishing this book?
It comes out of a very odd place. I mean, I never really decided to do a book. It was just Glenn Beck, who I disagree with on everything, but who we've managed to be kind of friends, was talking to me about how he thought the Ten Commandments transcended religion, which is a very odd argument for a religious person to make. He's making the argument that, you know, that is made in the, you know, the moral landscape, you know, the argument that that morality does trump religion. Religious people usually don't make that argument. But he was making this argument that the Ten Commandments were important, and asked his atheist friend, which is me, I mean, that's the end of the list, what the atheist Ten Commandments would be. And I wrote up my idea or my take on the Ten Commandments for Glenn Beck. And to his credit, he handed out my article, my strong atheist article, at all his rallies. And I started writing more and sticking things in, and it started to seem like fun.
So are you hoping if you can get Glenn Beck to announce that God is dead, you will have accomplished the goals?
No. Yeah. There never was a God. God is dead is a halfway measure I won't go with.
Well, here, yeah, atheists are famous. I mean, this is a good time, arguably the best time in human history to be an atheist.
1890.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
I mean, were atheists on the top of the New York Times bestseller list?
I believe so. Okay. I believe so, that the three highest paid lecturers in the 1890s, you know, the end of the last century. The three highest paid were Robert Ingersoll, who was speaking exclusively on atheism. He had also a lecture on Robert Burns and Shakespeare, but those weren't as popular. Second place, Mark Twain, who at that time was doing Letters from Earth, all speaking on atheism. And third was Thomas Huxley, Darwin's pit bull. So, you know, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. There was gold in them there hills. And then, you know, Emma came along, grabbed atheism, pulled it into socialism, and then we go to hell in a handbasket. Once you associate atheism with socialism, I'll let go of atheism.
Atheists are known for being having a huge metaphysical certitude that equals or mirrors that of the most fervent believers. Yet in your book, I mean, you start, your credo is about how you say, I mean, the most important phrase is, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I really see that that whole idea that atheists have certainty is, I believe, a complete myth. I know the hardcore atheists, you know. I know Dawkins, I know Hitchens, you know. I know Harris, I know Dennett, I know the guys. And I've never heard any of them say that they are certain there's no God. They say they don't believe in God. And I follow the kind of fundamentalist Christian point of view that belief is active. And if belief is active and you don't know, then you don't believe. So I have a very, very light kind of atheism. Now, I don't harbor any possibility of there being a God. It never crosses my mind that that would be possible, but that's different from knowing.
Did you have a particular Damascus Road experience where that became clear to you, or is this the work of gradual rationality?
That's one of the things that's so interesting about atheism. People have epiphanies to become religious. People become religious at horrible bottom times in their life, cry out to Jesus under great stress. You don't hear that story in atheism very often. It's usually gradual. It usually comes from reading. It usually comes from discussions. It usually comes from introspection. And for me, it was being in high school and reading the Bible. I mean, I suggest to anyone who's looking for the road to atheism, just read the Bible. By the time you get to about the middle of Leviticus, you're out.
No, that's right. and you also might give up reading as well. Yeah. That's when Ayn Rand starts looking really inviting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You have a chapter called Why I Am a Libertarian and Not a Nut.
Yeah.
Okay, so explain why you're a libertarian and why that doesn't make you...
I believe I say why I'm a libertarian nut and not just a nut. So I haven't really taken that away. You know, I really use, I guess you'd say more as a rhetorical device But it still feels like it's real in my heart. That I remember hearing one lecture that y'all put out by P.G. O'Rourke, where he was addressing a bunch of libertarians and said that what we all have in common, and I'm paraphrasing because his wording is always perfect. You remember it perfectly. What we have in common is everyone in this room does not know what's best for everyone else. That's all we have in common. And my whole take on libertarianism, I don't go with pragmatic arguments at all. The arguments that our whole world would function better, I don't go for the arguments that the free market is magic, and if we left it alone, everybody would be better or happier off. I always go to kind of a pure ideological, moral point of view. And I just don't know. I mean, the question I have is the 17-year-old girl who's working at McDonald's, who is a brilliant mathematician, is on a track to a full scholarship to Stanford, and she is going to be one of the great mathematical minds of all time. And she chooses to get knocked up and continue to work at McDonald's. Is that something that society has to fix, or is that her individual choice? And I was kind of in that position, you know, by no means a genius, but I had
by no means a woman.
Exactly. Right. I had scholarships to colleges I wanted to go to, and my high school was very, very optimistic about me doing well in college. And because I'd done so badly in high school, I could only move up. And I chose to go to clown college. I chose to juggle. I chose to make jokes. And
when are you going to give up this magic show? You know, now that your parents aren't here, I think somebody has to step in.
But really, the point of view on libertarianism for me is simply that each person has to make those decisions for themselves. And I don't know what's best for other people. And there's a quality in, especially you see in Hillary Clinton when she's speaking, where all her motives are very, very good. I mean, I'm not one of these people that believe she's an evil dragon lady. I think she really does want everybody to be happier and healthier and more successful and everything else, but she knows what's best for them. And I don't think there's anything you can do more insulting than acting like you know what's best for someone else.
One chapter in the book, which is actually taken from something that you wrote up for Reason Magazine, the three dogmas that hurt Americans most. Let's run through those quickly. Your first three dogmas, God?
God is the first one, because if you take God away from the right wing and away from the Tea Party and away from all of that, and by God I mean all that kind of social meddling, their position's pretty sensible, mm-hmm. You know? And then the second one is that people are good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the one that you have here, the dogma, is most people are evil.
Yeah, most people are evil.
Who believes that?
Every time I have a discussion, and I'm sure you have these too, but I'm the libertarian person, mm-hmm. and I'm talking to a liberal, and you tell them, they say, your basic position is let all the poor people suffer, let all the sick people die.
And you say, it's the only way I can see of making a living.
You say to them, no, we'll take care of each other. Oh, Piers Morgan said to me, you know, one out of seven people in this country is on food stamps. What does that mean to you? And I said, that means six out of seven people can help them. Mm-hmm. And he said, how do we help them? I said, go help them. He said, we need the government to help them. I said, go help them. I said, I am. Yeah. Go help them. He said, well, how do we do it? I said, I didn't say we. I said, you. You make a pretty good living. Mm-hmm. There are people that are hungry in LA. Go out this evening and help them.
Right.
there's this sense that, you know, Buffett, you know,
mm-hmm.
Warren Buffett saying, you know, I think they should take more money in taxes from me. Okay, give it to them. Yeah. You know, there's never that. And they always will come back when you say, well, I try to help people. And everyone I know that has money, and many people I know that have very little money, try to help people. They always come back and say, that's you.
Right.
But there's all these assholes that'll just, and there's this sense that, and I believe firmly, you know, if you pick the person, they're all good. If you pull a Ferrari up in front of a Starbucks and say to a random person, my wife's pregnant, I gotta run in the car with her, I got a driver there, my car's out there, just please take it and park it and text me at this number and run away. They're not gonna steal that car. your vast majority of people are going to go, oh, Jesus, I don't know if I can drive a stick. And they're going to get it there and they're going to do that. And I think if liberals would just trust people to be better, there's no problem with them either.
Then you have your final dogma that is that hurt Americans most is from John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. This isn't this the great statement of what it means to be an American?
The first half of that is so good. You know, there you're rolling. I really believe, and I think there's some evidence that the Founding Fathers believed this too, that government's job is to get out of the way. I don't think we owe anything to our government. We owe things to each other and to our families and to humanity as a whole. But having any sort of allegiance to the people in power, I think that not taking anything from the government, not giving anything to the government, and doing nothing wrong is a fine way to live.
Do you think skepticism towards power, first off, do you think it's on the rise?
You know, it's so, I always think that this stuff is my age. You know, I'm 56 now, and I think about how, man, things are going really bad. And then I think about my dad in 1971, 1972. The president is crazy. Yeah. He has gone crazy. We're in Vietnam, killing people completely.
There's a draft.
We're being taken off the gold standard. The gold standard is gone. Inflation is wild. It's runaway. There is a Cold War with Russia. We could all be there's no comparison to now. I mean, Afghanistan and all the wars overseas are horrendous and terrible, but there's not a draft.
So is skepticism on the rise, do you think? Skepticism towards power?
I don't know.
Is it a good thing to be skeptical towards power?
Well, absolutely.
Or does it ultimately corrode people's ability to make decisions or do anything?
I don't think it does at all. I think that I think skepticism, there's this bleeding of words. Where cynicism and skepticism are becoming synonymous. And you have people like Bill Maher who brag about being a cynic. Right. And it sickens me. I am the least cynical person I know, and I'm very, very skeptical. I do not expect the worst from people, but I also think that some things aren't true. And I think we have to be careful about that.
To go back to this question of humility in front of the world, you say we all act on things we can't prove, but that's different than faith. What is the difference between saying, I don't know, and why is that better than having faith that something exists?
I think that saying, I don't know, and going anyway, which you have to continue through, leaves the possibility that you can change your mind. It leaves the possibility that you could be wrong.
So you're open to the idea that something will happen that will convince you of God's existence?
I'm open to that. Yeah. It seems very, very unlikely. But in terms of the faith thing...
We're not going to find out when you're dead. We're not going to find a secret shrine to Buddha or something.
To Sun Ra.
Yeah.
Because of all the things I'm skeptical of, I do believe Sun Ra was from Saturn.
You say the only real argument against religious terrorism is to try to share the reality of the world. How is that? You know, why is that going to stop people from blowing up buildings just a few miles from where we're
talking? I think if we share reality, if we talk about things we can prove, the problem with talking about faith is you hit this wall. Why do you believe Jesus Christ is our Lord? Do you have evidence? I feel it in my heart. If you move I feel it in my heart out of the equation, terrorism goes away, completely goes away. You might have military events. I think my people should be free, and here's the reason why. Here's our lands that are occupied. But the idea that, you know, it we're already there. I mean, this is the part that no one ever talks about. If you go to the center of the Bible Belt and you have a fundamentalist Christian judge, and all the lawyers and all the jury are fundamentalist Christians, and they believe completely with their heart, and I'm not doubting them in any way, and someone gets on the witness stand and says, I killed my whole family because God told me to. it's astonishing to me that nobody goes, well, let's look into that. You know, we have guilty, we have not guilty, we have not guilty by reason of insanity. We do not have not guilty because God told me to. And that's one of the things that I'm obsessed with in this book, is the fact that not only do I not believe, but how can that judge read the Bible and see Abraham being willing to kill his son because God called him to, see burning bushes appearing to people, hear people dropping all their worldly possessions and going on to follow.
Staying clear of linen and wool blends. Back to Leviticus.
Exactly. What side of the tree you defecate on, right, and so on. How can they see all that? And then a woman who clearly believes that God told her to do something is completely and utterly dismissed. It's a nutty thing.
You said you're optimistic or you're forward-looking. You've got two children. Are they going to grow up in a better world than you did?
Oh, absolutely.
And why are you certain of that? Are you taking that on faith, or how do you know that?
The evidence shows you that two things have been true throughout mankind's history. One, things always get better. Two, people always think they're getting worse. You know, we talk about the stress of modern life, but we're not chasing down wildebeest to eat and not being attacked by animals in the night. I mean, unless you're a Vegas magician, in which case you are. But I think things will definitely be better for them. And also, things are getting more peaceful.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I carry on about let's stop killing people overseas, person for person, we're killing fewer people than we ever have.
Well, that's just a sign we've given up.
Yeah.
I want to thank Penn Jillette, author most recently of God Know, New York Times bestseller. Penn, thanks for talking.
Thanks, always a pleasure.